ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिकां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधाने भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी.
Verse 3, chapter 6.
Carol, you don't say the Sahana of the Gita.
No, I say this. Oh. This is the Gita Dhyana. Oh. So we use that as the prayer.
Arurukshormunerayogam. Arurukshormunerayogam. Karmakaranamuchyate. Karmakaranamuchyate. Yogarudhasyatasyaiva. Yogarudhasyatasyaiva. Shamakaranamuchyate. 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 Arurukshoho munehe. Yogam karma karanam uchyate. Yoga arudhasya tasya eva shamaha karanam uchyate. Aruruksho, from Aruruksho means the one who is desirous of mounting or climbing upon something. Like Mumukshu, one who is desirous of liberation, Jignyasu, one who is desirous of knowledge. Aruruksho, you see the duplication there, Ruru, like Mumukshu. Okay, Aruruksho, the one who is desirous of mounting yoga. So, but desirous of mounting, it's an expression like, for instance, mounting a horse, you're getting on top of the horse. The one who's becoming an adept at yoga, one who's owning, becoming totally a master of yoga, is that, that's how they use this, arurukshu. So one who's desirous of mastery of yoga. So, arurukshoho munehe, for the muni. I mean, for the viveki, for the one who has a contemplative mind, the muni, the one who's capable of manana, and for capable of viveka, capable of contemplation, for that muni who wants to become an adept, who wants to mount yoga, and here yoga means dhyanam, the ability to contemplate, karma karanam uchyate, karma means karma yoga, is uchyate, is said to be the karanam, the cause. So now there's going to be a very meaningful relationship between karma yoga and a mind that is capable of contemplation. So for that muni, the one who's manana shila, the one who's capable of manana, the one who has viveka, the one who has a contemplative disposition, the mumukshu, for that mumukshu who wants to become an adept of yoga, karma yoga is the cause. Then, yoga arudasya tasya eva. For that person alone, tasya, for him alone, yoga arudasya, who has mounted yoga, who is capable of jhanam, of the, has that deeply contemplative mind, then, for that person, shamaha karanam uchyate. For the person who is capable of contemplation, then for that person, shamaha is the cause, sannyasa or jnanam. That's what the shamaha here is going to be, jnanam. Shamaha means that resolved mind, the sannyasi mind, that becomes the cause for the one, for that person who is already now, who has mounted the yoga. So let's see what that means. In order for the mind, for a person's mind, to be contemplative, right? It's not
The meditation doesn't create a contemplative mind. A contemplative mind can meditate. Very different, right? The meditation doesn't create or produce a contemplative mind. It's a contemplative mind that is capable of meditation, of nididhyasana, of upasana. So, what creates a contemplative mind? It means a mind that enjoys a natural shanti. That mind is a mind that has to some extent neutralized raga dvesha. The samsari's mind is a mind that is bound by raga dvesha. Raga means your likes, dvesha your dislikes. The samsari's mind is basically this. I like this, I want it, and so I have to do something to get it. Right? I like this thing. I want that. And now the bhokta to the desire has come. That's called kama. I like this. I want it. That I want is the kama. The kama, the desire, creates the kartrutvam. We could say that kartavyata, the state of having to do something now. Right? The instance I say, oh, I like this, okay, I like, you can, that, but the like, the thing is then we tend to sit on that like and contemplate on that what, the like. The like turns into a kama. As soon as it's become a desire, then there's something for me to do because I want it. It's not that I am it. I want it. I want it so that I can become whole, become complete, become happy, have some sort of pleasure. So now this is interesting. The kama itself generates the need to do something. Just think about it. If the kama is not there, there's not a need to do something. And so the kama is actually responsible for the karma. Right? And so this karta, the doer, is generated in the psyche. The sense of doership is generated in the psyche by the kama. When all is well with me, there's nothing that I need do. This kartavyata, it's a potential participle. It means this has to be done, this must be done, I should do this. Right? So the sense of having to do something, should do something, is created when something, I'm not complete as I am. I'm not whole as I am. That's what generates this kartrutvam. And so now, until a person recognizes I am a karta, that the Atma doesn't do anything. When I recognize the ahankara, the identity of the ahankara has gone from what we call the karana, the karyakarana sangata. Karyakarana sangata means the body-mind complex. Swamiji uses this term all the time, so I'm just going to use it now. Karyakarana sangata. Sangata means the complex. You know, the component parts put together. The complex of the karyakarana. Karyakarana, the karya is the body. The karana is that which has brought the body into existence. So the sukshma sharira that's traveling takes this physical body. So karyakarana sangata is going to account for the sukshma sharira, subtle body, and the physical body. And the subtle body, of course, contains all of the sense organs and organs of action. And then this sukshma sharira, because of prior karmas, takes a physical body. So the physical body becomes the karya, the effect of all of the karmas that are contained in the sukshma sharira. So we say karya karana sangata, just to talk about the whole body-mind sense organ complex that makes up the jiva. Okay. So now, this karya karana sangata the ahankara is normally, for the samsari, from beginningless time, identified with that. Right? I am this. Right? And I need to be happy. And so the kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam is just natural to the jiva. Because I don't take myself to be a full and complete being. I take myself to be somebody who is continually changing and needing to manipulate the creation in order to become whole. So that's the samsari buddhi. I like this. I want it. I do something to get it. Positive, that's the raga. I like this. I want this. I do something to get it. There's the kartrutvam. a negative, I don't like this, right? I don't like this, you know? I need to get away from this. I do something to get away from it, right? If some dislike is there, I don't want this, I do an action to get away from it. That's our life, raga dvesha. And so when you think about this, the raga dveshas that create a person's life generate for us a whole slew of emotions. When I'm not getting what I want, I can feel hurt or upset, or if somebody stops me from getting what I want, I can feel angry, and the anger can be justified, right, because the person actually is stopping me from getting what I want, right? Or the person is actually behaving adharmically to cause the ideal situation that would have been good for me to not be good for me. And so now the anger becomes justified. Or something that I want, somebody does something to thwart that and in some way hurts my feelings because they're not behaving in the way that I need them to behave in order for me to feel loved or wanted by them or important in the situation. And so they are actually generating, their behavior is actually generating these emotions in me because they are actually going against or thwarting the way I need things to be in order for me to be happy. And so this will generate, this behavior will actually be responsible for the generation of these negative and hurtful feelings in myself. Right? But, and so there's, as Swamiji says in his Bhasha, there is kind of a justifiable anger, a justifiable hurt, or a justifiable anxiety when my buddhi, my orientation, is based upon kama. When my orientation to the world is based upon, I like this, I want it, I need to do something to get it. If that's the reality, then naturally, legitimately so, many actions on the part of others or in the universe itself will thwart that and cause these legitimate annoyances. But the legitimacy is based upon the reality that I give to the raga dvesha. And the reality that I give to the raga dvesha is basically I need this to be happy. And that itself, I need this to be happy, that itself creates the kartritvam, the doership. Right? It generates the doership. Because now there's something I have to do to become whole. So, this doership is something which is absolutely innate to the samsari, to a person who doesn't have knowledge. It is not as though, you can't say that, well, you know, some samsaris, some people who don't have knowledge, who don't know the self, they don't have doership. You can't say that. Because the only way they can't have doership is if they recognize the self as free from doership. And to recognize the self as free from doership, that self cannot be dependent on the kariya karana sangata. It can't be dependent on the body, the mind, the sense organs. I have to be able to say, I am not my body. I am not my mind. I am not my sense organs. Right? I'm not the ahankara. I'm not the buddhi. I'm not subject to bhoktritvam. The atma is not an enjoyer. I have to be able to say all of these things. If I can say all of these things, I'm a jnani. Right? If I can't say these things, then I'm a samsari. That means I exist within the creation as this body, mind, sense organs. And existing in the creation as a body, mind, sense organs, I am limited by time, I am limited by birth and death, my mind is subject to change, and the creation will give me what I want sometimes and what I don't want other times. That's the very nature of the reality that we experience. And so, this is the nature of the mumukshu who comes to knowledge. The mumukshu who comes to gain knowledge is not already a jnani. Right? So that means, this sounds like a no-brainer, but it sounds like the most obvious thing, but actually this is something that we have to understand. The mumukshu who comes to this knowledge comes with kartritvam, bhoktritvam, comes with kama. I need this in order to be happy, right? And I want it. And so there, I have to do something to get it. Even in reference to this knowledge, I need knowledge. I need to gain this knowledge. Therefore, I must go to the teacher. You know, say if I have that much viveka, I need this knowledge. I must gain this knowledge in order to be happy. I must go to a teacher. I must study. I must expose myself to the pramana. That's all kartritvam. Let me do this, and then I have to do this, and then I have to do this. And then maybe I should practice karma yoga. You know, maybe I should meditate. Maybe I need to practice karma yoga. I need to meditate. I need to understand all of these things. That's all kartritvam. I need to do this, and I need to do that. Why? Because I want. What do I want? This is the most benign desire, but still a desire. I want this knowledge. It's a desire. It's a kama. Why we say it's a benign kama is because when you gain this knowledge, it fries the kama. Right? When you gain this knowledge, the kama itself, you're released from kama. Whereas in all other kamas, when you fulfill a kama, when you fulfill a desire, they likened it to throwing ghee into the fire. You know, you fulfill one desire, you say, now that should be enough. It's a big desire, you fulfilled it, you should be happy now, that's it. But it's never it. You've just given another scoop of ghee into the fire, and now the fire is blazing, and your mind is thinking, now I need to put this scoop of ghee into the fire, and this, and this, and this, and the fire keeps blazing and blazing and blazing. Whereas with jnanam, even though that kartritvam is there, that kartritvam, that doership, you know, the desire template is something that is resolved in that knowledge. So we say it's a benign kama because it is the one thing that resolves kama. It's a benign kama because it's the one thing that resolves desire. But that kartritvam is still there. So as long as that kartritvam is there, that doership is there, one needs to practice karma yoga. Because karma yoga, remember, karma yoga is not something which is in any way removed from knowledge. It's not like a person does karma yoga and then later comes and does some shravana. So the karma yoga is an attitude, a way of being in this creation, a way of being with my raga dveshas, the kartritvam that's generated from that, in a way that neutralizes them so that there's a change in my orientation toward the world based upon my knowledge. There's a discipline in the way that I view the world, the way that I actually view raga dvesha, the way I exercise myself, the way I respond to raga dvesha, my likes and dislikes. That is something that is now going to be changed. And it's changed with a karma yoga buddhi. No longer for a person who's a mumukshu, who is doing shravana manana nididhyasana, who wants moksha. No longer is this the way I operate. I like this. I want it. I like this. I want this. I have to do something to get it. That's all there is in samsara. I like this, I want this, I'll do something to get it. Karma yoga, the kartritvam is still there. The needing to do something is still there because it hasn't been resolved. In fact, it doesn't resolve until the jnana nishtha is there. And so until the kartritvam resolves, then I have a different orientation toward the creation. It is no longer about fulfilling my likes and dislikes. What trumps my raga dvesha is my duty and dharma. In other words, it's not about fulfilling the desire template. It's about looking at. Let's here's one way to say it. There's a lot of different ways to talk about karma yoga. Looking at my life, the prarabdha karma. The unfoldment of this life as Ishvara, which it is. The whole manifest creation is Ishvara. this physical body has joined the manifest creation, so this physical upadi now is part and parcel of Ishvara. It is exhausting the life of this body, is exhausting the prarabdha karma that caused it to come into this loka at this time. And this prarabdha karma means the karmas that caused this body to take birth and will take it through to the death, right? This prarabdha karma is part now of Ishvara's order. And so, say I understand this and this, the Kariya Karana Sangata, say I understand it as Ishvara, then I will find, and you'll find this anyway, whether you understand what I'm saying or not, it's still a fact, that your life, moment by moment by moment by moment, unfolds before you. Right? In other words, your life is an unfolding story. Anybody can say this. You don't have to be a Vedantin to say this. It's a fact. Moment after moment after moment, your life is in an unfolding story. The mumukshu, the jnani, understand this unfolding story as Ishvara. That it's not my unfolding story as a conscious being within an inert creation. It's the unfolding of Ishvara, of a conscious being. And this body, mind, sense organs is part of that unfoldment. Now, that being so, what relationship do I have to this unfolding scenario that makes up my life? So what is my relationship to it as a mumukshu, as a karma yogi? It's one of what we call Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. That means my buddhi is one of Ishvara Arpana, means it's like a doing puja. It's like doing a service to Ishvara. It's like a devotion to Ishvara. And then I recognize this as Ishvara, and so all of my actions are done toward Ishvara. So how does that translate? Dharma. Ishvara, sometimes we can almost use Ishvara and Dharma simultaneously, synonymously. Where Ishvara is the order. We look at Ishvara as an intelligent being. It is the order. Ishvara manifests as the order of creation. And so, what is my relationship to Ishvara's order? What do I want my relationship to be? One of Dharma or one of Adharma? And so we say, my relationship to Ishvara is one of Dharma. And so then, what is primary to what I should do in any given moment is governed by Dharma. Means, what does the situation call upon me to do? And then, if my raga dveshas, the raga dveshas are still there, because kartritvam is there. So I'm not resolved in the atma yet. I don't recognize myself as the very source of all ananda. So the kartritvam is there. So how do I handle the kartritvam? Dharma trumps kartritvam. So everything is done for the sake of Dharma. If something, Dharma trumps kama, that's what I meant to say. Dharma trumps the kama. And so if my desires are in line with Dharma, I have a problem. If my desires are out of line with Dharma, problem. Dharma comes first. And now another way of saying that, Ishvara comes first. My relationship with Ishvara comes first. Right? And that's where my commitment is. And with that commitment being to Ishvara, to Dharma, before to I like this, I want it, and therefore I have to do something to gain it. My commitment now is not to that. It is rather to Ishvara, to Dharma. When the commitment is to that, Dharma, then the mind gains a natural shanti. What causes conflict in the mind, so this is where, this is the pulla, the immediate fruit of this. What causes conflict in the mind is a dharma. So when something in my prarabdha comes up, and I want this so that I can be happy, and I want it more than I want the dharma of the situation, so that I will go against Dharma so that I can have what I want, I will have a mind that's suffering from conflict. And so, on the other hand, if I want something and what I want goes against the Dharma or what is proper in the situation, and I choose the Dharma over what I want, even though there will be initially a conflict because I want something and I'm having to sacrifice it, when I make the sacrifice for the sake of what is appropriate, my mind will have shanti. The other way, the mind doesn't have shanti on any level all the way through. And so when my mind gets used to, gets practiced, it's what we call kaushalam, when it gets practiced at the trumping of Dharma over kama, the mind gains a tremendous amount of strength. It gains a natural shanti, even though it's within relativity. It's within the relative world. And that shanti is based upon the way you are behaving in the world. Right? So it's relative, because you could behave differently and then that shanti would go away. But if the way that you, if the commitment is to Dharma, there's going to be a natural strength and steadiness in the antakarana, in the mind. And it is that, and that's, so that's what the karma yoga, that's what the karma yoga is. Well, it's quite simple. The whole relationship is to Ishwara, not to my raga dveshas. The relationship, the commitment is to Dharma, not to raga dvesha. Why is the commitment to Dharma? Because I'm a mumukshu. Because right, we're talking about mumukshu here. The commitment can be the Dharma for samsari also. But we're not talking about a mumukshu who wants to gain this knowledge. And when that karma yoga buddhi is there, right, then the mind begins a natural shanti. And that natural shanti then creates a mind that is capable of contemplation. Right? Such a mind then, so he says, the karma yoga is the kavanam. That is the cause for that's what allows a muni, a mumukshu, right, to gain, become adept in yoga. And the one who has become adept, capable of contemplation, has a contemplative mind. Now, that person who has a contemplative mind is that person then that can, as we'll see in the next verse, that can become actually a Sarvakarma sannyasi. So that person that can gain knowledge, right, can recognize actually the nature of myself as akarta. There's nothing in the mind conflicting with it. So it's that person then becomes, he says, shamaha karanam. For that person, that yoga is going to resolve into shamaha, into jnanam. And jnanam itself is going to give me knowledge of the sarvakarma sannyasi. Okay, myself is sarvakarma sannyasi. So let's look at the next verse as it develops this.
Yadahi nendriya teshu. Yadahi nendriyanteshu nakarmasvanusajjate nakarmasvanusajjate sarvasankalpasanyasi sarvasankalpasanyasi yogarudastadattarochate yogarudastadochate yadahi na indriyarteshu indriyarteshu na karmasu anusajjate sarva sankalpa sannyasi yoga arudha tada uchate. It's defining now the yoga arudha. He says, the one who has become an adept at yoga, okay, at jhanam. Yada, he says, yadahi, because when, because he's just said, shamaha is the cause, this jnanam really is the cause for this yoga arudha. Just because yada when, na indriyarteshu, toward all of the sense objects. Indriya is sense organ, arta object. So, toward indriyarteshu, and karma su anusajjate. So it says, when there is sarva, I'll just do it line by line.
because when, toward all of the indriyas, nakaramasu, toward all of the indriyas, sense objects, indriyartheshu, and toward karma, toward all of the indriyas and toward all actions, na anusajjate, one has no attachment, no raga, no desire. Anusajjate, no desire, no attachment. Sarva sankalpa sannyasi, that person is a sarva sankalpa sannyasi. This person is a sannyasi, is total renunciation toward sarva sankalpas. All sankalpas. The sankalpa is this. The sankalpa is the commitment. I like this. I want it. And therefore I must do something to get it. That's the sankalpa. I like this. So I want it. Then the sankalpa comes. The kartavyata. I must do something now to get this. That's the resolve. That resolve is called a sankalpa. You know, in puja, or when we do have rituals done, say if you have some Vedic rituals done and we do puja, always be, or even when we're doing prayers, we'll make, say you're doing so many malas a day. Usually before you're doing that for a reason. Say you're doing five malas a day to do for something. You're doing it for something. That something that you're doing it for is a sankalpa. I am doing this for that. That's what we call a sankalpa. It's a resolve. I'm doing this for that. That's the kartavyata, that this needs to be done. I need to do this. That's the sankalpa. So, sarva sankalpa sannyasi is the one for whom there is no such need. Sarva means all. Sarva sankalpa, all sankalpas, sannyasi. The one who is a sannyasi toward all of these sankalpas, who does not have a desire toward sense objects, indriya artha, toward sense objects, nor toward karmas. Means I don't have a desire for any given karma, nor do I have any given sense object. I don't need this to be happy. I don't need this to be happy. I don't need this to be like this to be happy. I don't need this to go away to be happy. That is equally important. The raga dvesha. Raga dvesha are the same thing, likes and dislikes. They're both exactly the same. It's just negatively put or positively put. I need this to be happy. I need this not to be there to be happy. It's the same. It's just a negative. So the person for who the indri arthas, the sense objects, you know, I'm not attached to them. I don't require them. I don't have a raga or dvesha for them. I need this in order to be happy. That isn't there. Nor is that type of attachment there toward karmas. I have to do this. It's my duty to do this. I must do this. I must not do this. Those karmas also aren't there. In fact, Swamiji and Shankara have discussed this now. The Vedas themselves, the Vedas, the whole scripture, the scriptures are meant for the karta. The scriptures are meant for the ajnani, not for the jnani. The Vedanta, the Upanishads are not meant for the jnani. They're meant for the mumukshu. The first part of the Vedas is meant for, right, the karta, the samsari. The first part of the Vedas are for the ones that, you know, what can I do to become happy? What is dharma? You know, how can I get to heaven worlds? How can I have a good birth, the good next birth? What is my dharma? And how do I fulfill my desires so that I can become happy? It's all samsara. That's the first part of the Vedas. The second part is how can I gain knowledge? How can I gain knowledge to be free of the samsara? That's the Vedanta. The whole thing is for the karta, bhokta. It's for the jiva. It's for the ajnani. It's not addressing the jnani. Right? And so, here, for the jnani, sarva karma sankalpa, the sarva sankalpa sannyasi, there is no sankalpa even about I should do this or I should do that. I must do this or I must do that. If this is my, these are my karmas, these are my duties, these are the things that must be done by me. In fact, the sannyasi, when a person takes sannyasa, all of those sankalpas, all of those duties, all of that, I must do this and I must do that and I must do that, that is all renounced. All sankalpas are renounced. All duties are renounced. Why? Because the Veda is not talking to me anymore. Why? Because I am sitting as Atma. I am Paramatma. Right? The Paramatma doesn't need to do anything. Right? Now, if the Kartritvam comes back, the person isn't sitting as Paramatma, and the Kartritvam, the Kama comes and says, well, I really do want this. I really want this, and you know, I need this to be happy. Now I'm back into samsara. Then karma yoga. Right? As soon as you're back, as soon as that's your reality, if that's the reality, then karma yoga. But for the jivan mukta, for the sannyasi, karma yoga is finished also. Karma yoga is finished because there's no karta. What is it? This is Ishwara. Right? The karta is resolved into Ishwara. And so what is practiced by a karma yogi is the natural for a jnani. If the jnani needs to practice karma yoga, then the karta vyata is there, that this must be done, this needs to be done by this, I want this to, in order to be happy. All of that, that's there. And that means that there's some forgetfulness, or, you know, we're still working on ourselves. Right? If that's not just the natural behavior because of your own knowledge. Okay, so now, it's kind of he's really talking here in these verses about the jivan mukta. So, see what he says. Yoga ruddha. So, tada ujjate. When the person is a sarva sankalpa sannyasi, means not desiring sense objects in order to be happy, not having a sense that I must do this or I must do that in order to be happy. When that isn't there, no more sankalpas are there, then that person is mounted in yoga. So what is yoga meaning here? Is just mounted in yoga ruddha means that mind is recognized what? Atma. So who is, think of this kind of interesting thing. Say if you look at think of the clay pot. Right? The yoga ruddha is the pot who is resolved into the clay. But the pot's reality is the clay. For me, for the jnani, the mind's reality, the body's reality, the karyakarana sangata's reality, the universe's reality, Ishwara's reality, is me, is the Atma, is the Paramatma. And that's where my mind sits. My mind sits in the Paramatma. It sits in the Paramatma anyway. Right? The pot sits in the clay, whether it recognizes that or not. But if the pot recognizes it, then it is freed by its clayness. If the jiva recognizes, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, if it recognizes it, it is freed by its knowledge. It's not that it wasn't that before, but the mind, being samsara, in samsara, within this transmigratory existence, not knowing that this, is not resting in the clay, resting in the Atma, rather it's resting in where there is no rest. Right? It's abiding, it's sitting in the samsara itself, asking the samsara to give me what it doesn't have to give. And so it's whole, I need this and I need this and I need this. It means it's whole lost out here in all of the namarupas and all of the names and forms. The mind of the jnani isn't lost. No matter how many names and forms are here, it's still only clay. Right? No matter how many names and forms. It's like Swamiji's graham cracker stories. You know, no matter how many shapes of graham crackers are there, You know, whether they're, you know, dogs and cats and horses and camels and elephants. They're only graham cracker. That's all it is. It's, they're all graham crackers. One isn't more graham cracker than the other. And here in this creation, one is not more or less Brahman. There's nothing that has any more or less self, more or less ananda, more or less being. And so your mind, the mind that knows that is sitting where? Only there. Mm. In fact, there is nowhere else to sit. It's not like it's a big struggle, like, should I sit in, you know, or should I? Because there's nowhere else to sit. It's just that is recognized. And when that is recognized, that's why you can say, I am the whole. I can say, I am the whole because I am the whole. Not because I'm trying to be the whole, but because I recognize the sat-chit, you know, of all of the nama-rupas as my own being. That's a reality. And so now where is the mind sitting? It's sitting only in the Atma. Now it's in the Atma. It is the Atma. In the Atma. It is the Atma. Right? The Atma, which is Brahman. Now what do I want? Do I want the horse graham cracker? You know? Or do I want the giraffe graham cracker? Or the space in between. So that mind has nishtha. So in fact, the focus of that mind is on the Atma. Right? What is, you know, when we talk about gestalt, when, you know, in gestalt, you have the background and the foreground. And this gestalt, what was used to be the background becomes the foreground. The Atma, the self, is way in the background. And the samsara, the nama rupas, were in the foreground. This body-mind sense organs and my interaction, the cartridge one, the bokeh one, foreground. But for the jnani, the body-mind sense organs is karya kadana sangata, and the rest of that belongs to Ishwara, belongs to the creation, right? In a sense, it's not that it slips into the back and the Atma comes into the front, but the Atma, yourself, becomes into the front in the sense that all of these nama-rupas, Ishwara, is only that. So there's not the creation in the foreground and Atma in the background. It's that this is the Atma, so I would say the Atma catches up and comes into the foreground. This is the Atma. This is Brahman. Right? It's not that there's a little self experiencing the world. It's that this is the self. That's the thing. This is the self. This is the Atma. And I should be able to say that as clearly, recognize it as clearly as saying that this is the clay. Tell the pot, if I teach the pot, this is clay. You are clay. Say if you have a clay relief, bas relief, a sculpture of a big square block of clay with all types of activity going on. You know, there's some little students there in the bas relief. They have to be able to recognize, right, that they are clay and that there's only one clay there. They have to be able to see that. Now, the fact is that when they're told you are clay, right, and that there's nothing there but clay, the reality is that there's nothing there but clay. That is the reality. And so that reality has to be recognized, right? That's the situation here. There's nothing here but your being. That is the substance. And that's what has to be recognized. That, and all of these prakriyas, all of these teaching methodologies that we have are meant to point out that fact, that recognition. Such prakriyas, you know, like it's just simple things that
if it is true that everything has one substance, that there is only one substance, one without a second, that is true to everything, then there's a lot of things that that's not going to be. Right? That can be negated. A lot of mithya, I would say, a lot of mithya that can be negated. Like, for instance, this chair is not the rug. This form is not that form. Right? True, this form is not that form. This body is not that body. So all of the names and forms are going to be negatable, and yet there's something here which is the essence of all of these differences that is non-negatable. And that non-negatable essence is not away from me. Right? And so I have to be able to see, it's like a little quiz or something. What is it? What is here that is non-negatable? In my experience, what is here that is non-negatable and is the same everywhere? And that's why there's so many prakriyas, but one of this, it is, Swamiji will do it, is, it 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 is, isness, 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 existence, 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 being, 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 being. What is your experience of being? Amness. That is the experience of being, is amness. If I say, is there a difference in my experience between amness and isness? Am is. There's no experience of isness. The experience of isness is amness. So you can say, am. Or is. And that is something that is a common denominator. That no matter what you do, no matter how many objects you break into smaller and smaller parts, the isness remains as the common denominator. What else remains as common denominator, no matter what the experience, whether you're looking up or down, sideways, what doesn't make any difference, is known. Consciousness. There is no experience away from consciousness. There is no experience away from existence. This is the clay. And then if you think this consciousness, this conscious isness, can I objectify it? Of course you can't objectify it. Because who would be objectifying it? And you shouldn't be able to objectify it if it's one without a second. And it can't be objectified, and yet it is known, it's self-evident. Your amness and your existence, there's nothing away from it, ever, at any time, and it is self-evident. And so now I just need to recognize that. I need to differentiate it, to recognize that all of this that enjoys existence, all of this that it is known, you can't take the existence away from it, you can't take the knownness away from it, but the knownness, the existence, never alters, it never changes. It's the satyam, it's the truth. It is what is actually here. And is that me or not? It has to be me because anything else is objectifiable. I can't get beyond, I can't get deeper, I can't get behind my existence or my consciousness. And so this being that I am, just I've taken it to be limited, to be part of the mithya. I have to recognize it's not part of the mithya, it's the very satyam, it's the very clay of the universe. But I have to recognize that my being, my consciousness, is not something that's contained. The thoughts are contained. The emotions are contained. Body is contained. Right? But consciousness, you, the Atma, is not contained at all. There's no limits to you at all. There's no, you're not enclosed. There's nothing, in fact, that's separate from you or away from you. And so this knowledge has to become clear. This is jnanam. And it's this knowledge that resolves, that brings about that yoga arudha, that being mounted in yoga.
for a person to even be qualified to be able to see that, they say that you need that karma yoga to bring about, you know, the shanti. But if that shanti is there, right, then the mind is available to, because relative shanti, it's available to recognize my own presence in the light of this knowledge. So that's what they're talking about here. Oops. All right, I guess we'll stop here. All these next, this next verse also. This verse is it. Next, yeah, that's good. We'll do this next set in 2 or 3 weeks, I guess. Okay, I'll stop. Can I get the light? Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.
Now, the more you kind of understand what you're just talking about, it feels like the more I understand that, and I really notice it in my life actually, the more I become like a renunciator in my own world. And it's like being like a sadhu in the marketplace or something. That's kind of my analogy in a certain way, you know. But and in a certain way, that's kind of okay. But in another way, it creates a certain... It seems like it creates a certain dysfunction because there's a certain drive that raga and dvesha that created the drive, right? The drive is suddenly not there anymore. So there's a certain kind of disinterest in some of these values that most people run after. So now the question is... how do you sustain the interest in the marketplace if you are not really, if you recognize it's less and less you and what you're after? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I think actually that the interest that is your prarabdha is there. But the extraneous interests drop off. I mean, the interest, like, you know, like the Joneses, or, you know, so-and-so has this. Gee, if I had that, maybe I would be happy. Or look at what they're doing. They seem to be having fun. If I did that, maybe I would be having fun in that way. So that the type of things that really don't have to do with you drop off. But then your interest... there will be interest in the things that you happen to be interested in that are your prarabdha.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't think that it's true that you don't have any interests. You know, but what are the interests that you do have? And don't compare it to other people. Just what are the interests that you have?
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a new vision, really, in that way, too.
And it's the prarabdha, because mm-hmm. the other interests do drop off. Mm-hmm. And that makes the life pretty simple in a way, because you don't have a lot of things that you want to do. Mm-hmm. You only want to do what you're actually doing. Mm-hmm. And so then you think, oh, I don't want to do anything. But that's not true. You're doing lots of things. Mm-hmm. But the only things you want to do are what you're actually doing and what are the things that are actually there to be done. So there's not a lot of complexity or projection.
That's clear.
And then it's kind of neat also when you see like some desire to do something arising in your mind that has enough to pull you forward. That's interesting because there's your prarabdha is coming into play unless you aren't able to distinguish between your prarabdha. But say if you are able, something's a desire is coming, then you'll say, that's very interesting. Because you watch the unfoldment of your life. Because there's nobody inside, perhaps, saying, you know, I think if I could do this, then I'd be happy. If I could do this, I would be happy. In fact, if you are, just as you're, in the whole maturing process, say you are doing that kind of getting into that, or now maybe, fantasizing if this would happen and that would happen, then yeah, that could work out. That would, that's all kalpita, it's all imagination, right? And so you can kind of pull your mind back from that and say, we'll see, don't worry about it. Let's see how it goes. But then you'll find that there's a whole nother level of reality where you are functioning, you are doing what you want to be doing, but you're doing it now. That's the prarabdha.
Mm-hmm.
You're engaged in it now. It's absolutely natural.
Instead of planning in the future so much.
Yeah, that you're, in fact, even the planning for the future happens in the present at the appropriate time. And we do plan and, but there's planning and then there's worrying about when I'm going to be planning. There's a time for planning, just like there's a time for everything that you do. It's not that we don't plan, but you plan when it's time to plan. Do you see the difference?
Yeah, but on the other hand, it's like there's no. I guess I'm not experiencing purely living from my prarabdha karma yet. But I'm starting to kind of get what you, because I'm actually sensing it. It's kind of starting to that shift. What you were describing there, there's a certain kind of loss. But not to get confused with the loss of that drive as an actually loss of vision, The vision is just a new vision and maybe a more prarabdha karma vision.
Well, I think it's much more stable and the mind isn't feeling so needy that it has to become full. It has to become whole, has to become complete, has to make your mark in the way, in the sense of your own wholeness. That goes away. The mind becomes much more settled because it's already in the wholeness of yourself, and so it's not needing to be satisfied in that way. But then whatever you're doing comes from that center then, because you're a centered person. You're not trying to become whole or complete in all of this. Then what you're doing is coming from that place, which is your prarabdha. So it's very stable and strong in that way. And when it's not, then that's when you kind of pull your mind back. That's where karma yoga, that karma yoga buddhi comes in then. Until your mind is just naturally gets stronger and stronger and stronger and more, staying more and more at home and needing less and less and less to be satisfied. That's part of the maturing process. And as that maturing is taking place, you're also more and more kind of appreciating Ishwara.
or you're the life that is here. Whatever it is, this is what it is. You know, it's unique. It's what it is, moment to moment to moment.
But it's kind of also, you know, as a Parapta Kama, it's interesting. Some of you might have a very exaggerated Parapta Kama, right? In some way exaggerated, let's say.
Well, sometimes we say they might have a bigger footprint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I mean. And so there's some, let's say, some kind of movie star, right? That's a Parapta Kama. It's all over the chart. You can even see it in Jyotish or wherever, you know.
Yeah.
Well, now they want to kind of bring that through now, but to kind of, if they have this success written all over their life, there's got to be some ambition behind that, right? To fulfill that Parapta Kama in that case, you know what I mean? So how is that person going to handle that if they now come in touch with this knowledge? They might not want to be a movie star anymore. That would mean then they don't live the Parapta Kama, you know? So how does that justify?
I wouldn't say like it's about wanting or not wanting to.
Mm-hmm.
Like say if their life is to be a movie star, you know, they could love acting. They could love making films. They could really enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
But their whole inner orientation is totally different. They're not so fragile. You know, that I need the adoration or I need this or that to be happy. But you're still, because it's your karma to be doing that, you're still totally engaged in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with, say, being a movie star or being a, like they use examples in the Shastra of being like King Janaka, who was considered, you know, very wealthy and big, powerful king who gained knowledge and he continued to rule the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That was his karma, you know. He was right in the thick of it and just continued to do it, except that now the buddhi is at home. It has knowledge. Either way, he would be ruling the kingdom, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the person inside is, you know, much different. And so being a movie star could be a very exciting life. Especially if you have knowledge.
Yes.
And very, very, there's so much narcissism in that world that it would be hard, fragile. You know, I think that egos are really need to be protected in that world, very painful world, actually.
Yeah.
You had mentioned that, let's say somebody does japa with the sankalpa. But then the desire is that I want this, and so I'm doing the japa, five malas a day or some sankalpa I'm taking. But I want the fruit of action.
That's
also.
Right. Yes.
Okay, so then I'm to do japa without the fruit of
action?
No,
no. But say you're doing the japa.
Okay.
Say you're a mumuksu.
Okay.
You're doing the japa.
Okay.
And there could be a lot of reasons that you're doing it. You're praying to Ishwara because of the, you want a family member to become well.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm.
That's a prayer to Bhagavan,
right.
Asking for grace.
Right.
Their relationship with Ishwara, their dharma, no problem.
Okay.
Say you're doing the japa for antakarna shuddhi, you know, so that my mind is pure, so that I can gain this knowledge, you know.
Mm.
Or all of these things.
Mm.
Their kartritvam is still there, and you're praying to Bhagavan in order to gain some pala.
Mm.
It's wonderful. It's beautiful. There's nothing wrong in it. But say if you're praying for something adharmic, then there's a problem.
Right. But then, but you said that, is it? What if that fruit does not come as my expectation or what I want?
Then that karma yoga buddhi is what you need. It's just
okay.
Like...
Then I still need, then can I say I still need to do more japa?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I can say that?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
See what she's saying is like, say you're doing japa, you have a sankalpa, and Bhagavan keeps saying no. Every time Bhagavan says no, then you, as karma yoga buddhi, you take it as prasadam. Okay? Every no, is you take as prasad, shanti, is there. And then you keep trying.
So you do another 20 malas? No. Prasada buddhi, okay?
If it's your prarabdha karma.
Yeah. But, and then finally, I actually had this happen to me in a different, my trading days, where Bhagavan did nothing but say no. No, 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 no. Yeah, but I would keep trying. No. Try more and more and more. No, 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 no. Finally, I gave up. Finally. You know? But the whole while I had, most of the time I had prasada buddhi.
But then, but then in some situations it's not acceptable, especially if you are praying for somebody else. And
but then you have to know Ishwar knows best.
Oh, okay.
It's not you know best.
Yeah, but then I can continue the prayer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Even a swami, a sadhu, Swamiji, will pray. Because so many devotees will come and say, Swamiji, you know, my son is sick, or all of these hundreds of things, and ask Swamiji, please pray. And Swamiji would do is give a sankalpa, give a prayer, you know. Why not? You know, for the well-being, in fact, for the sannyasi, it's what they live for is for the well-being of others. You know, there's nothing, it's a beautiful thing to pray for somebody. It's no, that's dharma. See, if you understand that kartrutvam, that Ishwar arpana buddhi, karma yoga buddhi, it's dharma. You know, what you do should be always for Ishwar. Mm. Dharma. Mm. But if it's for that, then it's in relationship to Ishwar. Right? Always.
Okay.
So that brings about that, the dharma in total relationship with Ishwar brings about that shanti. That's why that karma yoga buddhi is so important. And then that with that shanti, the mind's available to gain knowledge. If the shanti isn't there, what that means is that the raga dveshas are ruling. If the raga dveshas are ruling, then your mind is being held by samsara. When it's being held, it's samsara has it in its grip. And so when samsara has it in the mind in its grip, then that mind at that time is not available for knowledge.
But, you know, there can be like unconscious patterns that are in operation that have nothing to do with the relevant current world. I mean, it doesn't have to do with what you're talking
That's
about.
That's right. That's why in our next verse, and the verse after that, we'll get into that.
Oh, I see.
How to, you know, the verse says something like, you know, to... The self pulls itself, meaning you, the jiva, have to pull yourself up by yourself.
Yeah.
You can be your best friend. You have to be your best friend. Or you can be your worst enemy.
Well, I read that, and then I think Swamiji made the remark, if you don't do that for yourself, nobody can. Not even period.
You have to learn that, how to do that. But that's why we talk about all of that, even all this inner child, and how to be with the mind, you know, how to be with the unconscious, in a way that those parts can heal, you know. It's all very important.
Yeah. Okay. There's different levels.
Different levels.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different levels.
Mm-hmm.
Of taking care.
In regards to developing a greater awareness of discrimination in regards to what is motivating us when we are really being dharmic in our motivation, when we're being pulled by raga or dvesha, is this, well, contemplation is not of any value in that case?
It's not that it's not of any value, but the karma yoga is just telling you a way to relate to the world.
and to your raga dveshas in a way that gives you a relative shanti, so that you're available for contemplation. Mm-hmm. You know, but on that level, say your mind is conflicted, or you're in the world, your mind is conflicted or upset about something, then you can do some manana on, you know, contemplation on that, like what is it that I really want? What is really bothering me here? And then, you know, deal with that psychologically, and then deal with that in terms of your knowledge. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, what is really causing me the pain in this situation? What is really hurting me here? So that you can get to what it actually is. A lot of times you blame it all on some outside thing, but really there's something else underneath that's bothering you. And if you just ask yourself, a lot of times your psyche will, if you ask yourself kindly, you know, with some compassion, wanting to know, your psyche will actually often tell you what's really the matter. And then you can be with that and work with that and deal with it on relative, on a psychological level, and then deal with it after you've dealt with it on a psychological level. Deal with it on terms of your knowledge. Where does that ananda, where does the wholeness really lie? What is really the truth in this situation? You know? In fact, my engagement in the raga dvesha, or having things be in a particular way, is not where the wholeness lies, not where the well-being lies. The well-being lies in the atma and in my ability to objectively deal with a situation, whatever it is, without superimposing my ananda on it. You know, it's not getting rid of this situation, it's objectively dealing with the situation, but not superimposing my wholeness on it. And that allows the mind to have shanti, to stay home, and at the same time be engaged in helping in the situation. And that's what it would be, is helping. Because you're not asking it to make you whole. If you're not asking it to make you whole, then you can be useful in the situation. You can be objectively useful, helping, doing your best. But all of that, see, that Addis is so beautiful. That Addis is so beautiful to say. But then it requires some contemplative time, you know, to give your, and some satsang, you know, to give your mind that platform. Until that platform is normal for you, nishta, you need to give your mind the strength and satsang, contemplative time, you know, so that the mind can be that way.
Well, the mind needs to learn to feel at home.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So what role in that procedure would meditation then play?
Well, because we're doing karma yoga, your mind, if you're doing the karma yoga, the mind has some shanti, right? So then when you're doing dhyanam, say nididhyasana, is just really, it's giving the mind the time to own up your knowledge. You know, nididhyasana is really a beautiful thing if we don't spoil it with a lot of different rules. And, you know, like I need to do nididhyasana for 2 hours every morning, or all of this type of thing.
Oh, you mean like putting a lot of expectations?
Expectations. But just demands. Rather than that, have it
guilt.
Exactly. That spoils everything. But having that, your own practice, is something, you know, that just allows you to take the time to kind of bring yourself home. Bring your knowledge to the forefront. That's something very enjoyable. And you don't have to be in any, we'll see in this approach on Abhuti now, we'll get into this, you don't have to be in any particular position. Doesn't have to be any particular time. that you did Nididhyasana or you're reflecting. You know, it reminds me of this one joke that somebody told me, where this priest who really liked to smoke, and he was on cigarettes, and he was on a you know, a retreat, and so he thought, am I going to be able to smoke my cigarettes while I'm supposed to be contemplating? So he was kind of conflicted about this, and then he had the great idea. He went in and he asked his superior, said, you know, Father so-and-so, do you mind if I contemplate while I'm smoking? Of course not, son.
You know, I have another question about a mantra practice. You know, if you do a mantra practice, how do you... Is there a trick to focus the mind that it doesn't get distracted with thought processes?
Yeah,
while you're kind of trying to focus on the devata?
There are some steps. In fact, in my spiritual counseling class at school, part of it is going just... the whole semester going through these steps. It's just basically what you japa, there's some preparation you have to do before you actually start the mantra. One is being in a comfortable position so your body's not hurting, giving the mind a few minutes before you even start just to relax and roam around, to kind of let it chill out a little bit, to unload. Then to just ask your mind, what's on my mind now? What am I concerned about for the day? So to get rid of those pressures and let it just tell you. Then to address the unconscious and say, does anybody inside have anything to say? You know? And let those parts talk. And then for you to then think of your relationship with Bhagavan. What is on your mind? What is it that you want from Ishvara? So to be able to say those things. So to take a few minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is, just to give the mind an opportunity to be heard on a lot of different levels. And if you do that, then the mind will feel like it's been heard and now it's all right for it to contemplate. Otherwise, what happens is the mind has all of these things that, on all different levels, that it has on its mind that it wants to say or that's concerned about, you know, for the rest of the day, and you're not listening, and so you're trying to shut all these doors, but all those people have something to say. So you let them say it first. It only takes a few minutes. And then you'll find that your mind then is at peace. If it's still not at peace, then you say, what is really bothering me? Like maybe there's a bad relationship with somebody or some amends you have to make or who knows what it is. And then you think about that and try to resolve it or make some sort of resolution around it. So then the mind, and then see if your mind is at peace. And if it's not, then you say, what else is bothering me? So that you can get the mind to a relative shanti before you start doing the japa. Because otherwise, the japa is trying to quieten, you know, a resistant mind, a mind that's working against you. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we want to do with japa. You want to already have brought your mind into some peace. Then you do the japa, and then there's a real absorption, and if you're doing visualization, your mind's available for it. It's not working against you. Because otherwise it's like trying to put a band-aid over some agitation. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we're talking about here with the karma yoga. Particular buddhi, a particular way of being in the world brings about a mind that enjoys a natural relative shanti. And then that shanti becomes an absolute shanti in the recognition of the Atma. The The mind always is relative shanti. The Atma is absolute shanti. The mind, you know, the pot has to recognize the clay. You have to recognize the absolute shanti, right? That's pervasive to the relative shanti. And the relative shanti is initially brought about by that karma yoga buddhi. And for jnani, the absolute shanti is the shanti that the mind is enjoying. So it's not dependent on anything. Do you have to say no about that?
No, that's pretty clear. Oh. I'll try that. Mm-hmm.
So we'll have class on Sunday. Then we're all off for Christmas.
The fact that he talks about, meditation is spoken about in the sixth chapter.
Yeah.
After karma. And there's this idea of there's karma yoga is coming before meditation.
That's interesting.
That
yeah,
there's an
that's
order
right.
to it.
There's an order to it. And you know, also the first six chapters are on the jiva. 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh my God.
The first six are on the jiva. Next six are on Ishvara. And the last six are on the identity. Jiva Brahmaikin. And so now we're in the last chapter of the jiva, in a sense. You know, and that will move in then to Ishvara. So,
What's coming after the 12th chapter?
The Mahavakya, the identity between Jiva and Ishvara. More emphasis on that. I mean, everything is there in every set of six, but the emphasis is. Yeah.
Okay. You're welcome.